we do want to know that, but how far in the Russian schools did you have to go, in the secular schools?
Oh, I went and I received my my elementary education in the Soviet school, no question about it, and a little bit of the high school. In fact, I was advanced, I was already in the seventh class. It was compared, let's say, to about 3 years of high school here. I was up to that. Because I know when I came here to New York to study at Yeshiva, I took the Regents in Geometry and I passed it, and I took the Regents in Algebra and I passed it. I took the Regents in German and I passed it. So it was the equivalent of 3 years high school.
The gymnasium, which
they
I've
called
always
it
heard of.
They called it the seven-year school. They did away with any
Russia.
Names
oh.
under the Tsar.
Oh, I see.
You're right, but it was
because I have heard my parents.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Where did you learn to speak English?
In the United States. I came, I did not know a single word of English. And I started right away. I went to night school. And then our parents had a private teacher. Of course, education was terribly important in our home. And even in Russia, my mother had in addition to school, she always had a private teacher to teach us German. And she always had a private teacher to teach us music. We were taught how to play piano and music. And we went out of the way to give us really a maximum of education. So we had quite a background when we came here. English, as I said, I studied here and I came to New York. I was admitted to what was called then Yeshiva College, now it's called Yeshiva University. And there I received my Bachelor of Arts from Yeshiva College in 1939. I was ordained into the rabbinate in 1941. And then was honored by Yeshiva University when I was appointed to be the editor of the scholarly volume commemorating the late Dr. Ravel, the founder, the first president of Yeshiva University. I have the volume right here if you want to see it. You know, Yeshiva University, it's
yes.
The leading university outside of Israel. This is Dr. Revel. He was the founder of Yeshiva University, and I was the editor-in-chief of it.
I didn't know what your middle name was.
Yeah, it's Bernard Aaron Foucault. So that was my first effort by way of publication. And I studied in Colombia I did graduate work there, as I mentioned to you. And I continued my higher education at the University of Pittsburgh, where I received my PhD in 1952. I wrote the first work on Jewish religious adult education, which is now a recognized work and used as a text in a number of schools, graduate schools of Jewish education. I also went to the City College of New York, I should mention. And
I'm sorry, did you receive a degree from Columbia?
No, I transferred here. I came in the middle of the work and I got here my doctorate. Now later on I was editor of the Rabbinical Council of America sermon volume. It's a scholarly sermon volume in memory of the late chief rabbi of Israel, and I was the editor in chief of it. I was the editor of it. Now, you see these volumes, here are, I cannot take them all out, here are about 34 annual volumes of sermons, and I have a record of over 350 sermons of mine published by the Rabbinical Council of America. I'll give you an idea of what I'm talking about.
I'm afraid we're losing your voice.
Yes,
every year Rabbinical Council puts out a volume of the best sermons preached by rabbis in the United States, United Kingdom. And in these volumes, there are over 350 of my own. I'll give you an example. For example, in this volume, I have all the sermons, 24 sermons, two for each, for the book of Genesis here. And each one of these volumes contains such sections of my sermons. And right?
Yeah. Even I know what that is, Sefer Bereishis.
Yeah. Why wouldn't you know? You're a Jewish daughter. You expected to know. And presently, I am the associate editor of this volume. So whatever I'll tell you, I like to document. This is my weakness. Then I published a book in Yiddish. Where is it? It is called In the Shadow of the Kremlin. It was based on my three visits to the Soviet Union. I have also written over 300 articles in several languages on the Jews of Soviet Russia. These articles were published in Russian and Hebrew, in French, in German, in English, here. And I'm preparing another volume which will take out those which I believe deserve to remain in book form. And even as late as recently, I could show you right here, only 3 weeks ago, I had a long article on Jews in Soviet Russia. I received over 40 publications continuously from the Soviet Union. Here, they come in every morning, right here, straight from Moscow. And, of course, what am I interested in? What they write about Israel and about Jews. And I write articles on these, this is, for example, the crocodile, which is the leading humor, sophisticated humor, Soviet Russia. And they always have some cartoons about Jewish, the hooked nose and the terrible eyes and whatnot. And I bring this to the attention of the world. For example, I was a co-convener of the first Brussels conference on Soviet Jewry 5 years ago, and also of this last one, which was held in Brussels. And there I made a presentation at the plenary session showing how the Soviet Union emerged as the center of anti-Semitism and racism in the world. The Soviet Union is now the largest exporter of anti-Semitic, vicious, virulent, primitive anti-Semitic literature in the world. And right there, Wiesenthal met me, and he asked me to collaborate with him on a book. He will bring in the German aspect of propaganda, Streicher, Goebbels, what they have done prior to the Holocaust. First they dehumanized the Jew, and then they killed him. And this is what the Soviets are doing right now. I wish I could, let me see whether I have some of my stuff here, which is reproduced. Do you want to see it now, or what I could get at this?
I think it would be better if you stayed with the time.
Yeah,
so
okay,
that we don't
I'll stay. Fine,
these
I'll do
important
that.
Things.
Yeah, so anyhow, I have addressed the Brussels conference, and of course, I don't like to brag, but as you probably know, that I was the co-chairman of the first Rabbinical Council of America delegation of rabbis, which really opened up the door for American Jews to the Jews of Soviet Russia. I was the first rabbi to speak from the pulpit of the Central Synagogue in Moscow, and this was in 1964, then I spoke again in 1965, and then again in 1967 when I was thrown off from the pulpit for invoking the State of Israel.
What year
and this
was
just a few days prior to the Six-Day War.
Oh, so that was...
In 1967, just prior it was at the end of May, and I came up and they warned me not to mention Israel or Zionism, and I did not listen to them, which I felt I had to, because there were over 2,000 Jews in the synagogue. The ambassador of Israel was there, And when I finished my sermon, he embraced me and he says, this was the first time in 54 years that Jews of Russia heard openly from the pulpit about Israel and Zionism and other Jews. And since my first visit, I have thrown in myself into this work. I went to Europe. I met with Jewish leaders, with Christian leaders, and I started writing and speaking on this topic. I addressed in the United States close to 150 Jewish communities on the problem of Soviet Jewry. I went on television, I went on the radio. In fact, just now when I was in Brussels, I prepared, they asked me, I was invited to prepare programs for 11 foreign countries. And I have demonstrated, I've shown the propaganda of the Soviet Union against Jews, Judaism, and Zionism, and so forth. And this has become a very major, a central preoccupation of mine. And on the Pittsburgh level, we came and we organized the Pittsburgh Conference Soviet Jewry, and I was its first president or its first chairman. And I am continuously involved in this agonizing problem. And what else?
What else? I noticed in the Chronicle a couple of weeks ago that you were just elected to some very important honor. What was
it? I was plenty. I have been for many years very active in the Rabbinical Council of America, which is the leading and the largest organization of Orthodox rabbis in this country. Our well over 1,100 rabbi members serve the religious needs of some 1.5 million Jews in the United States, the United Kingdom, and in Israel. I have been national vice president of RCA. I have been editor of several of their publications, and I am now the associate editor of the sermon volume. And I'm on the editorial board of the Rabbinical Council of America's prestigious scholarly journal, the quarterly scholarly journal known as Tradition. And I was the chairman of 3 national conventions of the RCA. I'm the only member, I believe, who had this honor. And one of these conventions, the first and the only convention of Orthodox rabbis, national convention of Orthodox rabbis to be brought to Pittsburgh, I brought it here in 1951. If you recall, we had sessions at the Y and at Webster Hall. Then I was chairman of the religious articles for Israel Commission, which got some 1,500 scrolls of the law to send to Israel to give to kibbutzim and so forth. And I'm also the permanent chairman of the Campus Commission of the Rabbinical Council of America, which takes care of the needs of students, their religious needs on the campus. And now I was elevated to be member of the Executive Committee of the Rabbinical Council of America, which is the central policy-making organ of this organization. And I'm also on the Rabbinical Court Committee of the RCA, the Beth Din, which is the Rabbinical Court. So this is as far as the RCA, but of course, you know, I am very much involved in Zionist work, religious Zionist work. I have served for well over 3 years as the national president of the Religious Zionists of America, Mizrahi Hapoel Mizrahi, and I serve now as member of the World Executive of the Religious Zionists of America, and I'm also a member now of the World Zionist Executive and of the Jewish Agency for Israel, where I go about twice a year to meetings to Jerusalem and so forth. And one of my biggest prides, of course, is being the co-founder of the Hillel Academy of Pittsburgh. And being its chairman of faculty and personnel since its inception. I've been serving as chairman of this committee during the last 28.5 years continuously. We started Hillel Academy with 6 students. We have now close to 400 in a high school. And our school has national recognition for scholastic caliber of our students. Our students are admitted to Harvard, to Yale, to Columbia, to Albert Einstein College of Medicine. We have now in medical school at one of our classes about 6 boys of one class alone in medical school. And this is one of my biggest prides, and of course the building of the new Sheraton.
When was this building?
Oh, I knew you would ask me this, and I prepared the data right here so that I would be accurate.
Yes.
Now, I told you that I came here in 1942, and we had a groundbreaking for this. The first, we had high holiday services of the Sharet Torah in a rented hall where the Iron Kaufman settlement was on Forward Avenue. Do you remember?
Yes.
Where they have now the
bowling alleys.
Right. Do you remember this?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Because I thought you are too young to remember this.
I'm
old enough to remember it. Now, we had the first high holiday services in Squirrel Hill, the Iron Kaufman settlement, in 1945, Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. Then we had groundbreaking ceremonies for the new Sharet Torah, April 20th, 1947. And then we had our first religious services in one unit of this building, four walls, if you can call it a unit, and some kind of a roof, September 3rd, in 1948. In 1948, we had our very first, so in 1978, it will be 30 years, it's now 28 years. In 1948, we had our first services, and here I organized the first Hebrew school that this synagogue ever had. This is a historic, venerated congregation. It was founded in 1880, and we are approaching our centennial celebration. And we were the first Orthodox synagogue in Pittsburgh to build a Hebrew school building. This was an innovation. And here in the shul, I had to organize from scratch the sisterhood, which is now the largest sisterhood of all the Orthodox congregations in this region, and the only one which sponsors an adult educational program with the book reviews every year. If you notice, we have 8 continuous weeks. I review books, and we have classes for the adults before the book review. And then we also have, for the women, special sessions in Ethics of the Fathers of the Talmudic Sages, 6 weeks in between Pesach and Shavuot, Passover and Pentecost. And then we have the Men's Club, and this was the first Orthodox synagogue to organize the Sunday Minyan breakfast idea.
Is that right?
Yeah, the first one. I started this on the hill, and we are going to begin now this coming September, the 35th consecutive year of it.
Do you find many Orthodox young people now?
Oh, yes. We are experiencing an exciting phenomenon in the United States right now. We have a number of young people who, although they come from non-observant homes, I don't like to say non-religious. I believe religion is a very delicate, complex matter. There are people who observe nothing at all, and they can still be religious, in my thinking. Now, but I'm speaking of observance, ritual. We have many of these who came from homes where there was no observance, and they are in search, and they want to come back closer to tradition and to observance. We have them in this synagogue, we have them in other synagogues. There was a tremendous change since I came to Pittsburgh. When I came to Pittsburgh, there were very few observant Jewish youth. And now we have a substantial and impressive number of doctors, lawyers, scientists, academicians, business executives who are living a Jewish observant life. Some of the top positions here in Westinghouse, occupied by Jews, personnel, research, others. I know they come to my Talmud lectures and so forth. They are observant Jews. There is one man who has top secrets of our nuclear defense system and so forth. a person who is regulated as to where he travels and how he travels because of all the secrets which he has. And he is a Jew who comes and learns and blah, gimore. You know, here on a Sabbath, I'll give you an idea what it means in Orthodox congregation. I preach and I deliver lectures 7 times each Saturday, in 24 hours of Saturday. We have a Talmud study group, a Bible study group, Ethics of the Fathers study group, and then we have other classes for the adults. And we emphasize learning very much because we live in an age of enlightenment when Jews, most the American native Jew is a graduate of the high school, and we're going to have a preponderance of them graduates of college. We can communicate with them. It's interesting, the higher the level of education, the easier it's for us to communicate with them. The easier it is for us to impart to them knowledge, even when it comes to some that come to us for conversion. And incidentally, you should know it for the record, I do not convert as a matter of principle. I never converted since I am in Pittsburgh. I will help the convert to get the proper instruction. I will guide here or her or him. And we have several in our own congregation, very sincere converts to Judaism. In 3 cases, they made their Jewish husbands observant. And they read Hebrew well. They have kosher homes. They study Jewish culture and history. And I do not hesitate to tell you, they know much more about Judaism than many, many born Jewish scholars. And they are people who came from universities and colleges, and therefore they have the tools of research and the learning and the methods. I'm not speaking to you about a mass movement. I'm just telling you of several. But of course, we are also facing a problem of intermarriage. We have families where 80 and sometimes 100% of the children are intermarried. I have here one family where 3 out of 4 children are married to Gentiles and unconverted. This would be, and it is a threat and it's a pain, because the sub-zero level of population growth, of Jewish growth, plus intermarriage, plus assimilation, is a very serious threat. And if there will not be a radical change, I am afraid that Jews will lose, by the turn of the century, very much in their numbers, and thus very much in their political influence, be it for the state of Israel or for other social causes in which we are intensely interested. So we are threatened to lose very much of our influence in the United States, the way things are going right now. Mm-hmm.
That's tragic.
I spoke on something you did not ask me. I don't know whether I should have spoken on this.
Well, oh, no, of course, we are interested. I think sometimes it's the family I know. Well, the mother has been always extremely active in Jewish affairs.
Yes.
All 3 of his sons are married. Except I know the oldest, the oldest one's wife has converted and is a very good Jew.
Yeah, here you got it, and so forth. Now, let's stick to the questions. Is that it? So you suppose go on with the questions.
Health, medical care, we're on 5.
Yeah.
Services available in childhood or early youth. Health and medical care.
Well, for example, in the Soviet Union, I mean, credit must be given where credit is due. Of course, they are not very much behind the Western world when it comes to medicine, when it comes to doctors and so forth. They are, of course, not on the high, sophisticated level of the United States. And speaking to Jewish doctors who come from the Soviet Union, and they come here, unless it is in the field of psychiatry or some related fields when it comes to medicine itself, they are behind the American doctor and so forth. But we had, reasonable, satisfactory care as far as that is concerned in the Soviet Union, and that is all I can say.
And adolescent years, fun and recreation.
No, there was no fun
for me. From what you tell us.
And there was no recreation. I never knew of it.
Courtship, marriage, children, dwelling places.
Well, I told you about our children.
Yes.
I met my wife,
yes,
Gilda. She is the daughter of the late Rabbi Novoseller, Tversky Novoseller. She comes from a very long line of rabbis and Hasidic sages. And she comes from Philadelphia. She is a graduate of Gretz College. And of course, she's quite active in our own congregation. She teaches the Bible class. She's very active in the sisterhood. And she's quite active on her own in the affairs of Hillel Academy and other communal undertakings.
She's very beautiful, too.
Thank you.
What year were you married?
What year was I married? I'm sorry, my wife isn't here. I'm so embarrassed. I think it was...
how long were you married?
31 years. 31. I came here, I was a bachelor.
Oh, really?
No family.
Oh, really?
I had an apartment on Darlington Road. Do you remember Mrs. Greenberg who used to give piano lessons?
Yes.
And she... Do you remember her?
Yeah.
She was from Russia. Oh. And I had an apartment with her on Darlington Road, next to the home of Dr. Asher Isaacs.
Yes, I
must mention the name of Dr. Asher Isaacs because he was very helpful to me in some of my projects, which I initiated in Pittsburgh, be it of a religious or a cultural or a communal nature. He was very helpful. You remember, he was the editor of the American Jewish Outlook, predecessor of the Chronicle.
Yes. He was the professor of economics
and head of
the
Department of Economics. So he was an expert on international economics.
And then you met your wife?
In Philadelphia, because our parents were friends. And I met her once at an affair which was held in one of my father's synagogues.
And you have, you said five children.
We have five children and five grandchildren.
And you yourself are a twin,
yes,
aren't you?
And we
you
have
twins.
Right.
Are any of your grandchildren twins?
No, not yet.
Well, I don't know. Does it skip a generation or something?
But it's very exciting to have
Must
twins.
Must be great. Well, it has its problems too, though, doesn't it? Now occupations.
We know.
I think you've covered
that.
Yeah.
Social life, family vacations, and
well, we go for a vacation to the seashore, and because our parents had their places of vacation there in Marble, New Jersey, or Denton, New Jersey, and to Israel, and occasionally to Europe. Our hobbies is we happen to be ardent lovers of classical music. So this is our hobby, to listen to a symphony. We go here to the symphony frequently. And we do much reading and social life. We have our friends, but you know, essentially the rabbinate is a very lonely profession. You are a loner to some extent because life and responsibilities and interests put you that way. You cannot help it. But we do have, I am chairman of the rabbinical board, which is the original branch of the Rabbinical Council of America. And I am founder, and I was of the first presidents of the Rabbinic Fellowship of Pittsburgh, which takes in the three branches, the Orthodox, Conservative, and Reform. And of course, there is a fellowship and a very pleasant relationship with colleagues in the community. And we cross lines on this. We do not stick to the Orthodox alone. Mm-hmm. I personally have been continuously invited here to speak and lecture on Reform and Conservative congregations. Only yesterday I had an invitation from Israel. I spoke in Rosh Hashanah numerous times. I used to open for a number of years the adult educational program, Temple Emmanuel, South Hills. So you see that we are interdenominational.
You're very busy too.
We try to be interdenominational, and it is fine. Neighborhoods, well, we have her children. They're wonderful neighbors. But there's one guy, Rex, I tried to attract him. I can't.
No, that's our daughter.
I tried to bribe him with bones and meat, and I can't help.